pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. 6 minutes after the hour on this Monday morning. So good to be with you. Big show planned for you today. Coming up here shortly, talk to my friend Paul DeMarco, former state legislator and also chairman of the Jefferson County Republican Party up in Alabama. Get caught up on what's going on around the state. He's just kind of looking at what the legislature's doing and, what about a, I heard the guys talk about this at the end of the last segment. What about Richard Shelby's seat with the AP story that came out on a Friday? More on that in just a moment, but you want to stick around for Representative DeMarco. State Senator Arthur Orr, he's the chairman of the Education Trust Fund. His bill to shield the businesses around the state from COVID liability seems like it's going to sell right through. I think he got one no vote in committee, but it looks like it's destined to be passed into law. Also on the program today, we didn't hear from her on Friday, but we'll hear from her today. April Marie Fogle. Then we'll close it all out with our good friend Satsuma. State Representative Shane Stringer saw that and more. Just want to stick around for it. A lot going on in politics. Let's kick it off here. As I said, Richard Shelby, a very odd timing, guys. We've been talking about this program, and you've heard everybody come on and speculate on what Richard Shelby, Saint Richard Shelby of Tuscaloosa was going to do in 2022, and it was pretty clear that his reelection bid was pretty much in doubt. He wasn't going to run again. Been in the he's been in the on Capitol Hill since the late 70s, but he's been a member of the U.S. Senate since 1987. Remember, he served as Tuscaloosa's congressman in the late 1970s, was a Democrat, came and ran in 1986 against Jeremiah Denton, beat Jeremiah Denton in the last midterm election of the Reagan administration. Yes, that's how long Richard Shelby has been a member of the Senate, and then has been ever since. Switched parties, I think, in 19, right after the Newt Gingrich takeover in the mid-1990s. And here we are today. He's looking at retirement and what that means. And there's all kinds of speculation about him being pushed to run once again because the business community in the state really depended on the federal government. That is the and there's something to that. Whatever you talk to Steve Flowers, the columnist we have on about once every couple of weeks, I mean, he'll tell you. Shelby's been big for a lot of the economies in Alabama, and I would say maybe not as much Mobile as Birmingham. And about the time Richard Shelby was kind of coming into the fold, remember this is when steel industry is so big in Birmingham, and it was going by the wayside as the steel jobs and the steel manufacturer was moved to Canada, and then it moved overseas to the Far East. Well, there was a void there that needed to be filled. Well, they had this little college there. It was like a satellite of the University of Alabama, and they decided to make healthcare their big focus. And now UAB, by far, is the biggest employer there, and it's really become kind of a Birmingham's really had healthcare fill that void. But, it's never going to completely fill the void left behind by steel, and there's still some of that up in Birmingham, but a lot of that had to come from the federal government, and was Richard Shelby, and you could even go Hal Heflin, Jeff Sessions, those guys making it a priority to get federal dollars steered toward the University of Alabama at Birmingham. But there's other instances all around the state of Alabama where you can see where Richard Shelby's left his thumbprint. Huntsville, I think of the Redstone Arsenal, and how that place has really become a headquarters for a lot of defense contractors. You know, a lot, but most of them are obviously in the Washington, D.C. suburbs. But Huntsville is really becoming like a little miniature Washington, D.C. So, you know, you drive down Research Park there in Huntsville and you just see all the brand names of defense contracting around there, right, before you headed to Richland Arsenal. Obviously, here Mobile, we would be remiss without mentioning Austell, USA. One big failing for Richard Shelby was that tanker contract. Couldn't get that nailed down with Northrop Grumman and EADS at the time. That was the classic power, Washington DC power struggle. And the Boeing powers, the Boeing forces won that one. It was Todd T. Hart, Norm Dix, guys I bet you haven't even thought of in decades, that really struggled that away for Mobile and got it put toward Boeing. But that not being said, that shouldn't probably take away from Richard Shelby. But as far as his politics go, I think a lot of you would say there's at least much to be desired. He's not exactly the conservative's conservative. I mean, pork barrel Southern former Democrat politician. He kind of comes from that lineage of like a Trent Lott, or, you know, we look at the state all throughout, like Sparkman and Lister Hill and guys like that, where Southern states really, their one big way was to kind of, they would coalesce around a cause or something and get a lot of money steered toward their home states, which a federal dollar in Alabama would go a lot further than a federal dollar in, say, New York State or California or wherever. And so you saw that trend throughout most of the last century. But Shelby's going to be remembered for that. And, you know, all hail Richard Shelby stepping aside. But there's a lot of people in the state that don't want to see that. They're really pushing him to run once again. He would have two more years left as on the Appropriations Committee. But Is it a given that Republicans would win the Senate back? I think pretty good odds right now if you look at it. But right now, ranking member, not quite the same as being that chairman. And that makes me really question whether or not it's worth it. Is this the way you want to spend the last several years of your time on this planet, steering pork toward Alabama? And he served his time. He paid his dues in some ways, was an honorable public servant. So I don't think he's going to run again, but all that conversation about the legacy of Richard Shelby, I'm sure there'll be volumes written about it. There almost already are volumes written about the service of Alabama senior senator, but it all begs the question, who's next? Who will be the who's running for that seat? And the speculation is it really comes down to three names. Congressman Mo Brooks, North Alabama's 5th Congressional District, very popular right now for challenging the Electoral College and really going to bat for Donald Trump. I think he is a much better position now than he was when he ran in 2017. Remember that weird race? Roy Moore ends up being the nominee. It's defeated by Doug Jones, and there you have it. Now the seat is occupied by former Auburn football coach Tommy Tuberville. But I don't think he was as well-known of a commodity. I think he is much better, going to be much more well-received this go-around. Plus, you don't have that weird situation. And there's been a lot written about this. Why, you know, Donald Trump at the last minute, just 4 days before that Republican primary in 2017, tweets out that he is backing Luther Strange, who was appointed to the seat by Governor Bentley. And that, while it didn't quite clinch it for Luther Strange, as we see, it pretty much ended Mo Brooks'. Even it was still kind of a long shot. We'll not have that problem this time, I would imagine. Probably pretty solidly has Donald Trump backing him. Donald Trump still carries muster in the state, and there's no reason to think he isn't. Then Mo ought to be in good shape on that front. But I also think he's got more of a name ID this time. The problem in this state, Bradley Byrne went through it last cycle. If you're from the polar ends of the state, Mobile or Huntsville, it's hard to really capture that middle where you got to win. It's just the Birmingham market, Montgomery, and it's hard to win from those polar opposites of the state. However, I think Congressman Brooks is in a much better place now that he's more of a well-known commodity. He'll still have the business community working against him. But if you ask me who the front runner is right now, it is Mo Brooks. Obviously, we're way, way, way out. That could all change. Obviously, another name to watch, Secretary of State John Merrill, the textbook retail politician, tries to go to every meeting and event. He's got an okay name ID. Maybe not as strong as one would think by going to all of this, but he speaks to very niche groups around the state, and he hustles. That's where he will shine. But right now he's a guy. And Katie Britt, the BCA, she is, by all indications, would be Shelby's handpicked successor. You see her making waves. I think somebody pointed out that a couple of, like, Katie Britt for U.S. Senate or Katie Britt for Senate or Katie for U.S. Senate or whatever, a bunch of those URLs were registered. And hearing things that I do, These campaigns are really trying to already think about who they might have as campaign staffers. So there's already some staffing up going on. But Katie Britt is a name. And then a new name, Linda Blanchard, being mentioned. I started hearing that name last week, but today in Todd Stacey's Inside Alabama Politics newsletter, behind the paywall, the former Trump ambassador to Slovenia is considering a run and could self-finance. So she's out shopping around. So you have four names. You're asking who the heck is Linda Blanchard, but she's somebody who might run. And the question is, though, even though she was kind of in that Trump administration, would that split the Trump? But I don't know. I think those two, Katie Britt, Linda Blanchard, if they do run, got a lot of work to do in getting their name out there. But it was really kind of peculiar timing. Kim Chandler, the Associated Press beat writer for the state, covers the State House, a bunch of other things for the Associated Press around the state. And she's to drop the story on Friday. It's the state's worst kept secret. Richard Shelby is not really looking at reelection. But I don't know about the timing there. Is it just sources she has and they finally got around to getting to the AP writer? Or was this something maybe more strategic, more of a green light to candidates? Hey, you might want to start thinking about running if you're going to run. Keep in mind, look at that last Senate run in 2020. It was about this time in 2019 when Bradley Byrne made that announcement down at Wenzel's downtown that he was running for Senate. And then slowly over the next 6 months, we had Tupperville. You had, along came Roy Moore. There was already Arnold Moody, the state representative from Birmingham, Stanley Adair, all these old names of that era. But they all kind of announced around this time, maybe a little bit later, but we're getting into that time when you start getting that announcement. And if you're working on building your name ID, you got to start hitting these meetings and going to things. So I would fully anticipate that all to start rolling here soon. More on that, maybe, just show on false 251-343-0106. If you want to weigh in on anything, this is the Jeff Force Show on FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening. 24 minutes after the hour on this Monday. morning. Feel better after the Super Bowl. You know what, guys? Those that practice this, it's become a religion with the wokeness, but I don't think it's really – I think it's more of a media creation. So the Jeep commercial, that is where we are in America right now, about how we have corporate America telling us how divided we are. And if you believed what Bruce Springsteen had to say during that Super Bowl commercial last night, you would think that people were being refused service because of their political stripes, and that we all are at each other's throats, and we're just on the verge of Fort Sumter again. But it's not like that really anywhere in America. Obviously, political unrest, what happened at the Capitol January 6th, all the Black Lives Matter protests is highlighted by the media. But I would say those are the exceptions and not the norm. However, corporate America has taken it and made it seem like it's the norm, and they're marketing off of it. They're going to sell you a Jeep Wrangler, and that's going to heal America. Is anybody else find that very strange? You could go down any countless number of initiatives by like Procter & Gamble or any other multinational name that's doing all this in the name of like ending systemic racism or whatever. I'm not saying systemic racism isn't a problem, but I feel like a lot of this this activism, this advocacy is being hijacked to sell us a new automobile or a box of detergent or whatever. Just think about that. Does anybody find that odd? Like the perception is what you see on TV, and then the reality of your everyday life seem to be two very different things. And it just goes to show you this. Those guys that make these ads, they are in a probably a 15 square block radius somewhere on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And they don't really get out much. That's their world, and they look at it, and they think what's going on in the rest of the country is on CNN or whatever. But it's just it's off-putting, but we shouldn't be surprised. I guess it's more shameless that it's being used as a marketing ploy. Let's check the text line here, by the way, 251-343-0106. We'll take the bottom of the hour news break. Charles has a question. I attempted to research this briefly but couldn't find the answer. Is the Alabama legislature able to hold hearings akin to what would take place at the U.S. Congress with the various committees? Yes, they hold hearings, but it's much different than what you see on Capitol Hill. The legislature doesn't have subpoena power. There's a lot of people that think that the legislature should have subpoena power to be able to subpoena government agencies and make them testify, kind of perform that oversight function. You can't perform oversight without subpoena power. But as with anything in Alabama, there's this fear would be abused. And you can go back and look over the last 100 years of members of the legislature. I mean, could you imagine what Mike Hubbard might have been like with subpoena power at his height? So there's been a reluctance to grant the legislature that, but they do have hearings. But mostly it's to come and ask for stuff or come to oppose something. All the weeks leading up to the legislature gaveling in, they had budget hearings, just like they would on Capitol Hill. But they don't. You can't get subpoenaed and then held or perjure yourself, be sworn in a legislative hearing. So it's more of a formality than something legal. But very interesting that you asked that, because there's a lot of people that think the legislature should have subpoena power. So, for example, well, one of these government agencies in Montgomery, and you think the federal government's bad, the state government, the bureaucracy there is a struggle sometimes. The legislature, they just have total disdain and disregard for these guys in the legislature. They come into Montgomery. They're there for 3-4 months a year. They don't have to answer to these guys. They're the people that make everything happen. They don't care about the state senator from Scottsboro or wherever. They're not answering to that guy. they're the ones that do all the hard work around here. I mean, there's such an attitude about that. So, I mean, you could name any state agency. I would just use the Alabama Department of Public Health, and I'm not saying Scott Harris does this, but you just have to answer those guys. He just put on a bunch of happy talk and say, yeah, well, we encourage engagement, but we're not answering that. Same with the prison, same with everything. That's kind of how state government works, much different than Capitol Hill. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person cold. But I can't say the same for me. I've done it many times.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. 34 minutes after the hour on this Monday morning. Thank you so much for listening. We do appreciate it. Still to come on the program, State Senator Arthur Orr. That's in the next hour. Then the 11 o'clock hour, you'll stick around. Our usual Friday guest had laryngitis. We'll be joining us at the 11 o'clock hour on Monday, or today, April Murray Fogle of Alabama today. And we'll wrap it all up with our friend State Representative Shane Stringer, Satsuma. Talk to him about some pre-filed bills he has that he is working on and kind of the general vibe up there in Montgomery. But joining us now, always a pleasure to introduce my next guest, former state legislator and also now the chairman of Jefferson County Republican Party, Paul DeMarco, is on the line. Paul, how are you?
Good morning, Jeff. How are you today?
Doing well. Let's get into it. Start off with this. The strange timing of Friday with the Richard Shelby and that Associated Press story, kind of the worst-kept secret in Alabama politics that Richard Shelby was flirting with the idea of not running for re-election in 2022, but it is what it is, and it's kind of a lot of discussion picking up around the state. You know, that seems to be like that ultimately could be a very wide open race.
I agree with you. Senate seats don't come open that often. Look at the race that we just had got filled. I mean, that whole saga from the time that Senator Sessions left with the Trump administration at the time that Tommy Tuberville got elected. I mean, who could have written that script? And so, but who could have written a lot of scripts? Robert Bentley resigning, Kay Ivey getting elected, everything that's happened in Doug Jones getting elected with the Roy Moore issues. So look forward to the next 2 years, year and a half before the next Republican primary, when he officially, I know it's rumor, but I guess he officially comes out, since he hadn't officially made that, that he's going to do that.
Yeah, and like, the way this works, though, you're already hearing the rumblings about campaigns looking around and staffing up, but if you're running a statewide race, especially for U.S. Senate seats, it's going to be very expensive. You probably start here real soon, you know, here the next, I would say next month or so, getting things together, because the way you win at Alabama, you really got to canvass the entire state.
You would think by, you know, maybe even no later than the 1st of June, if somebody's going to be in that race, they're going to be in that race because they got to start raising that money, particularly to be on television and all the TV markets up and down the I-65 corridor, and that's not cheap. And yep, then you get into the rest of the state. So you would think everybody that's going to get in the race, they'd get in the race by the 1st of June, you know, about a year out from the primary, which is what surprised everybody when, you know, Jeff Sessions got in so late in that race. So most folks that are going to be serious about it are going to get in by the 1st of June, which will be about a year from the primary, Republican primary.
And in Senator Sessions' case, what, the day before qualifying, kind of a, you know, like another one of those weird story lines like you were mentioning, who could have written that? Let's move to matters of a state a legislature. And you raise an important point. Right now, I mean, you served in that body, you served in that building, and right now it's not accessible to the general public. a guy like me and a member of the media could probably get in, but lobbyists and just people, sightseers or whatever you want to, civically minded individuals, you got to watch it on a live stream. And, you know, with all of these, they're kind of in this weird place where you didn't have a true legislative session in 2020. They want to make up for a lot of it this year. But you say we ought to be careful about that, given there's not a lot of public access right now.
I really do. We know the primary purpose they've got to do, which is pass the budget, the general fund and education budget. You know, let's get that done. There are other issues that I think all of us are agreeable with, you know, not taxing the funds that folks received during the pandemic, and some of these other issues related to the pandemic. But what concerns me is some of these controversial issues that seem to be rushing through the legislature. Some of these issues with the legalizing of marijuana, of some bills that are going to weaken the criminal justice system. Some of these issues that are rushing through without the true public access you would expect and demand of our legislature. And I would hope that some of the state representatives and state senators put the brakes on some of this and say, wait a second, we've got really limited access to the state house from the public. And we have, whether people not being able to get in the building or just being able to watch it on video, which is not the same, or listening on audio. And I heard through one of the committees that they had technical difficulties. They couldn't even hear what was going on. And by the time they did, it was one of the bills that passed through. And that's just not right, especially when you talk about the transparency. Because some of these bills in the past, they just kind of ram through. I've seen it. I've been there when that's happened. People step out of the chamber and something passes. So, you know, that's a real concern. And I think they need to focus on what is important to the state and wait till either later in the session when there's more public access, or wait till next year when the public has full access and can go to the committee meeting and express their concerns about some of this legislation. And I'll say some of the lobbyists are getting in the building that may be for some of these bills, but the public needs to have full access before they pass some of these controversial bills.
But I tell you, Paul, here's the problem. A lot of these guys, especially these freshman members, they have nothing to really run on. And the biggest thing they did in the legislature this quadrennium so far, arguably you can make the case for the abortion ban, but I think the biggest thing is the Rebuild Alabama Act. And it's going to be hard for these guys to run on, hey, we raised your gas taxes, isn't that great? Look at this new road. Versus, hey, we passed a lottery. Hey, we passed medicinal marijuana. Hey, we passed this, we passed that. And I think that's where the problem lies, that you have some membership that really wants to accomplish something. So when they go and they run next year, and you know that fourth year of the quadrennium, there's not a whole lot that goes on because of reelection. That's why you're seeing this kind of weird urgency.
Well, I think the public would say that they'd rather come back and see it in a special session where there's public access than ram through bills without true public access. And I understand why the restrictions are there. And it's going on across the country, restrictions. And I don't blame the legislature. I think they're doing a pretty good job of trying to keep the members safe and employees safe. So I don't blame them, and I commend them for doing that, trying to keep members safe and employees safe and folks are in the building safe. But at the same time, passing legislation and getting it through committee and getting it to the board, passing it quickly without the public being able to really see what's going on is not what we expect. It's not transparent. And then the legislature is rightly going back to the governor saying, hey, wait a second, what's the transparency in this prison leasing system? But at the same time, passing things through that there may not be transparency. So I think that's the concern that we all should have. And I hope lawmakers really say, wait a second, let's put the brakes on some of this stuff till we know the public has an understanding of what's really going on in this building.
And you served in that body, and you kind of understand how it works. Interesting to me, though, we haven't had that moment really yet where you have a member or two or a caucus that steps out of line that works against leadership. I mean, everyone seems to, even the Democrats, seem to be singing out of the same hymnal. You talk about the prison issue, And what I don't understand, Chris England and other guys like that will, you know, go on social media and they'll criticize it, but where are any bills to push back on it? But the broader point there, everyone seems to be kind of going along to get along in that body, and I wonder if that's also a dangerous omen, or it's happened in the past where you have everybody all agreeing on something. That's when bad things can happen, and I guess it's could be even worse without somebody or the public really having skin in the game.
Well, your point is well taken. It's just always say the most dangerous day in the state is the last day of the legislative session when folks are trying to ram things through at 2 a.m. and without the sunshine showing on it. And when you have members aren't questioning some of this legislation that's going through and saying, what are the effects of this? What are some of the long-term effects of what this legislation will have on the state? And it's a real concern. So, yes, not only the public not being able to see what's going on, but if you've got some members just unanimously passing things through because folks are saying, well, you got to do this. This is important. This is the only way to fix this. We'll say, well, wait a second. Let's dissect this. Look, that it is a concern for all of us out here.
And you mentioned something in our text here that this hasn't been on my radar, to be honest, or maybe it has, but just phrased differently. You mentioned a weakening of the criminal code. Are you concerned they're going to try to do something with this prison plan that's going to, under the guise of judicial reform or prison reform with sentencing, and really kind of change the way we handle our criminal justice in Alabama?
Absolutely. So the prison system, the chronic problems with the prisons need to be handled, no question about it. But that's not the responsibility of when it comes to sentencing. You've got to look at the victim and say, if this person committed the crime, they need to be penalized. You can't worry about if the prisons are overcrowded when it comes to sentencing somebody. You need to deliver justice. That's not the responsibility of the district attorney. It's not the responsibility of law enforcement. They're there if someone is found guilty of making sure there's a penalty for the crime. And so for the legislature to start reducing penalties and saying, oh, these people don't need to go to jail or so forth like this, that's not doing right for the citizens of Alabama. How many bills right now before the legislature are putting the victims first and law enforcement are giving tools to prosecutors to go after the bad guys? Look what's going around in Los Angeles and Chicago and New York, these no bail laws and not even allowing the district attorneys to go to parole hearings. Don't think these things can't happen here in Alabama. I hope your listeners know these kind of things are being discussed in Montgomery. And there are bills that are making it harder to prosecute, that there's going to be less sentencing going on for felonies and so forth. So don't think that all of a sudden red state conservative Alabama is not having some of the same issues being discussed. And we see the soaring crime rates in New York and Chicago and Los Angeles. That can't happen here in Alabama. They need to pay attention to what's going on in Montgomery. And that's what really worries me, the lack of public access that's going on at the State House.
It does seem like that crowd or that movement or whatever you call it, those advocates are starting to make some gains in the direction of weakening or whatever you want to call it, a criminal justice reform, quote unquote. I guess it kind of goes back to, you know, they had to shake up with the Board of Pardons and Paroles, but a lot of this, it just seems you have a bureaucracy. And you have some people at the top that are fine public servants, like I'll say Cam Ward, the former state senator from your area. But you have people in the bureaucracy that are just ideologically opposed to a really strict criminal justice system. I think maybe that's where some of the problem lies.
Well, I can promise you the ACLU and Southern Poverty Law Center and some of these other groups are at the State House every day trying to figure out how they can change our criminal justice system. Now, that's not, they don't have the same goals and what we think as a criminal justice system as the rest of us out there, victim rights groups, district attorneys, law enforcement. So that is my concern, and I hope state representatives and state senators are doing what I did when I was there. They're going back and talking to their police chiefs and their local line police officers who are on the front line every day about what's going on when some people are getting in and there's just a revolving door, people getting arrested and they're getting right back on the street and committing crime. That's happening here in Alabama, and they need to pay attention to what's going on in the state house. Well, some of that's being changed during this current legislative session.
And last, Paul, before we have to let you go, medical marijuana, and I don't know where you stand on this, but you mentioned that as something kind of interesting, that this seems to be like the year. I could go either way on it personally, but yeah, these guys, Mike Ball, Tim Melson, probably a lot of our listeners just swear up and down that this is a humane thing to do. But then you, on the other hand, you have a bunch of people say, oh, this is the gateway. This is Colorado, Washington State. This is the path to recreational marijuana, whether you like it or not. Well, what do you think about this?
Well, a couple of things. This was one of the bills that kind of sailed through the committee. And in the middle of a pandemic, we've got people, lost jobs, small businesses that are struggling, the whole vaccine rollout, all the concerns. You know, why is that a priority? Why is that priority moving through? In addition, are they hearing from individuals? I can tell you right now, you do look at what's going on in the state, the amount of money that's pouring in. The special interests, the lobbyists are at the state house making sure that the degrees the wheels for that legislation. What about the other folks who have concerns with that legislation? I can tell you that commission, it was stacked. People that on that committee told me it was stacked to say, oh, we need to move forward with this. There's a lot of concerns with that. And I hope that there's a legitimate debate from all sides about what happens with that bill and the concerns with legalizing marijuana. And we all know it's just one step towards the legalizing the recreational use of marijuana. And don't let anybody tell you that's not. There's just too much. It's about money. And anybody that says it's not about money is not being honest with you. And you can look at how much money is being made around the country when it comes to legalizing marijuana.
Is it just these companies coming in and I know in Florida you have they took an old change old Express oil change and turned it into a marijuana dispensary for medical marijuana. You say that profit incentive you think is really the engine driving this?
Absolutely, and you look at what happened in some of these other states where the marijuana dispensaries stepping up one stop after another. And if they really were concerned about the people, look at all the different folks that can get it. But the list that they say everybody that can get it. I mean, basically, it is legalizing marijuana when you said you can get it for this reason or whatever. So it's a real concern on what it happens. I've seen it from the business perspective when folks say, well, if you're making this right, and this has been litigated in other courts. If you say it's legal, then I can get it. And you can't, if I fail a drug test, you can't get me a drug test because it's a medical use. And so when it comes to workers' comp injuries and issues like that, it's a real problem. And it's going to be a real problem for employers out there, just as it has been in other states.
Paul, we got to leave it there, but we always appreciate it. We'll do it again real soon.
Thank you. Always glad to be with you, Jeff.
Thanks. Paul DeMarco, former state legislator and chairman of the Jefferson County Republican Party. Got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 1065.
I'm Bill Riles, WKRG News 5. Mobile police say the woman booked into Metro Jail Sunday for murder shot and killed her fiancé during a domestic dispute. 27-year-old Andrea Smith was charged. Police say she shot 29-year-old Caleb Hamilton Saturday night at the Plantation Apartments on Old Pascagoula Road in Tillman's Corner. A truck reported stolen from a gas station in Atmore has been recovered, and so have three teenage girls who were inside. Atmore's police chief said the girls were picked up sometime after the truck was stolen, but did not call it a case of kidnapping. 18-year-old Brandon Shepard was behind the wheel. He was arrested after leading police on a chase that crossed into Florida and then back to Alabama. Police say the truck caught fire at the state line where Shepard was arrested. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers earned their at-home Super Bowl victory over the Kansas City Chiefs, but after the win, fans poured into the streets celebrating with little or no masks or social distancing, leading to criticism from health officials. Police deployed tear gas into the crowd at least one intersection. I'm Bill Riles, WKRG News 5.
As a homeowner and your neighbor, I want to tell you about my friends at Air Specialty. When you turn to the experts at Air Specialty, you can rest assured you're getting the best quality service in the Mobile area. Air Specialty is a Carrier factory authorized dealer that's committed to your comfort and safety. Ask us about the indoor air quality products that can kill most viruses, bacteria, and allergens, providing you peace of mind that the air you're breathing is clean and healthy. Air Specialty and Carrier can do it all. Visit air-specialty.com.
License number 84408.
You've heard about the incredible benefits of CBD, but have you heard about CBN or CBG or the other new CBD compounds that provide very distinct results? Learn about how CBD works with the body and have your questions answered before you buy. Your CBD store of West Mobile is part of a national network of stores focusing on provider education, sharing that knowledge with our customers, and providing only high-quality products, all tested for effectiveness and taste. Shop your CBD store of West Mobile on Hillcrest at Greelot, still your most trusted CBD store.
Ever wondered what makes Omaha steaks so darn good? It's the aging process. Omaha steaks are aged at least 21 days, and that's where the magic happens. Hey, try these mouthwatering steaks in the Butcher's Best Sellers package at omahasteaks.com. Enter my code Sean, S-E-A-N, into the search bar to save over 50% and secure exclusive pricing. Included are four iconic fork tender butcher cut filet mignon, four ultra juicy burgers, four savory pork chops, four kielbasa sausages, four rich and decadent caramel apple tartlets, and so much more. In addition to getting more than 50% off, you also get four chicken breasts and four of those delicious burgers for free. Go to omahasteaks.com, type Sean in the search bar for this special offer, and order the Butcher's Best Seller Pack today. Save over 50% plus get four free chicken breasts and four burgers. That's omahasteaks.com, keyword Sean, S-E-A-N. That's omahasteaks.com, keyword Sean, S-E-A-N.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language like French, Spanish, or Russian, but thought it would be too difficult and time-consuming? Then go to Babbel.com and try it for free. Babbel works because it's built around real life. It teaches you everyday practical conversations that you will actually use. In 15 minutes a day, you'll be on your way to speaking a new language in just a few weeks. Babbel uses a modern conversation-based technique that makes language engaging, fun, and memorable. It starts by teaching you words and phrases. Then, sentences gradually get more complex. Soon, you're practicing short conversations about real-life topics. Babbel is created by language experts who use the spaced repetition method to help you learn quickly and remember what you learned. With Babbel, you can speak a new language. Babbel. Language for life. Celebrating 10 million subscriptions sold. Now try Babbel for free at Babbel.com. Just go to Babbel.com and start learning a new language today. That's Babbel.com. Babbel.com.
Cotton on the roadside, cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Singing song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5, 56 minutes after the hour on this Monday morning. Coming up in the next hour, 6 afterward, Decatur will be with us. Talk about his liability protection bill. Some other things going on in the legislature. There's something very interesting going on with the prisons real quick. Speaker McCutcheon, various press gaggles and interviews have said they're looking at offering up an alternative to Ivy's lease prison plan. Ivy's got a plan, and just to catch you up, because you haven't paid attention, where she doesn't have to go through the Alabama legislature to get it accomplished. All she's got to do is sign a lease deal. And the reason she could do that is the legislature sets aside X amount of dollars for the Alabama Department of Corrections, for inmates, for prisons, for all of that. And that's a pot of money that she believes she could steer are appropriate in order to execute the laws. And what she would do is close the existing prisons, have these companies come and build new prisons, close the existing ones, and then that money could be sent on the new prisons and paying rent, and could do that for 30 years and do it without having to go through the legislature. Why would you want to go around the legislature? Well, it's been very difficult in the past to get it done, and there's conflicts. There's some members of that body that don't want a prison that's a big economic component of their district to leave, to be shut down, and cost a lot of their constituents jobs. There's other people who are just ideologically opposed to new prison construction. They think we got schools and other things that are in disarray. Let's spend money on education, not on inmates. If you do the crime, you got to do the time. Therefore, we're not going to worry about prisons so much. But Speaker McCutcheon says, well, we're going to try to bond this, or at least we'll come up with a bond proposal, or we don't lease this thing. And 30 years later, then what? So that's interesting. I'll talk to Orr about that maybe in the next hour, how feasible that would be. We're going to break it here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 1065.
Just send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.
Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 1065. 6 minutes after the hour on this Monday morning. Thank you very much for listening. Still to come on the program, we'll hear from State Representative Shane Stringer. That's at the bottom of the hour. Also taking your calls, text 251-343-0106. Big news just now breaking. Richard Shelby made it official. He will not seek a seventh term in the United States Senate, and goes on to thank the people of Alabama. A long time in Congress combined with House and Senate time, Richard Shelby now has made it official. So let the games begin. And I can't think of anybody better to have on to talk about it on the heels of this announcement than from Alabama Today. April Marie Fogle joins us. April Marie, how are you?
I'm shocked, I say. No matter how many times we talked about it, I just didn't think it was coming.
Well, and he still would have had a role in appropriations, no matter who's in charge, Republicans or Democrats. But, no, it's. I thought this announcement would have come a little sooner. I was kind of expecting it maybe about 2-3 weeks ago. But for whatever
reason.
When
it didn't come, I didn't think it was going to.
Right, and the longer it went, the more I was like, he might flirt with running again. There was some pressure being put on him to do so from the business community in Alabama, but now that it's official, I think now you're going to start seeing all these pieces come together.
I think it's going to be wild. I really do believe that. I think that there is there's an appetite to find a candidate who isn't necessarily one of the ones we've all been talking about. You know, the Mo Brooks, Gary Palmer, Katie Britt, who isn't being talked about that can join this race, and if the race is on, and it's the usual suspects, where do they go from here?
Well, Todd Stacey's newsletter, the pay for one, the subscription one. Linda Blanchard, who was Trump's ambassador to Slovenia, not a well known commodity. Somebody I don't know very little about talking about Iran, just has very deep pockets. So the three aforementioned, Mo Brooks, John Merrill, and Katie Britt, are the names you hear. Seen a little bit of polling, and it's Mo Brooks right now with a pretty decent lead on Merrill. Merrill's still not out of it, but Katie Britt just polling in single digits. She's going to have to come in really hard to build her name ID up.
Well, and she hasn't said publicly, we've talked about this, that she hasn't said or done the things publicly that you would expect to see from somebody who was posturing for a move like that. And so maybe now that it is official, and the pressure is on for the people who are going to get in to go ahead and start making their plays, maybe we'll start to see something from her. But of course, she'd be in the single digits just because the BCA is only a known entity to those who participate in BCA stuff.
Well, yeah, and I would point to Jeff Coleman's struggles in the 2nd Congressional District. I thought he would dominate that. If that is the that would be the textbook kind of playbook or whatever that Katie Britt, I would think, would follow. Just outspend everybody, going to raise a bunch of money, would have the business community backing her. But if the circumstances don't lend themselves to that in the Republican electorate, and there's no reason to think that they will with Biden in the White House and it kind of being one of those kind of years, midterm years, that, I mean, she's going to – there's going to have to be something else that really gets her – I guess as a threat, or at least in striking distance.
Yeah, I really think that it's going to take a lot. It's going to take a lot of work for anybody at this point coming in who wants to overshadow where Mo Brooks is going to be coming from it right now. Mo, in terms of the Alabama Republican voters, he's got everybody's attention, and now with the impeachment starting, he's got the ability to hold on to that. And fundraise from it on a state level. I think this is going to be a very interesting starting place for this race.
Yeah, I think you're right. But these things can change. The problem, though, we look at what happened in 2020 or 2019 and going into 2020, it just, guys like a Bradley Byrd or even Merrill struggled. I guess unless you have a Tuberville or somebody like that come along, and I don't know who that would be, but that's what everybody's kind of waiting on. Who is the unknown in this? And we had gotten signals. I think those of us know that in the know, we're watching Tuberville sort of flirt with the idea of a run. And the later unknown turned out to be Jeff Sessions. But if you're sitting here today to trying to think of who that aspirational candidate could come in and clear the field out, I can't think of any names.
There really isn't any. In terms of the business community, I think that this race is going to be so pivotal for them. You mentioned the Coleman race in CD2, and we've talked extensively about the other things they've lost, the constitutional amendment. They lost, they didn't get Hightower down in one, I guess it was.
Right.
And Sessions again, of course, Luther Strange before that. And so you look at it and you think, if they can't get it together now, they may never be able to get it together again. Like, I don't know how you end up a huge company or corporation supporting BCA if they can't figure out a way to get their guy in the seat, because they need this guy in the seat. Tuberville is very new, very wet behind the ears. He's made a couple of statements that I don't think reflect his ability to be a strong member in the Senate. But I think that we need the more statesman-like person. Tuberville is going to be the good for camera, good for quotes, likable guy. But I think we need the business professional in there. And we're going to end up with Mo Brooks if the BCA doesn't get it together.
Well, I think there needs to be a viable alternative and all too often these elites in the business community in Alabama, they're very dismissive of Republicans. They're very dismissive of the grassroots of the Republican Party. I get Roy Moore and a lot of that, but that's why you get a Roy Moore when you just try to impose your will. It might behoove these guys to look at recruiting somebody like a Gary Palmer or even get an Ainsworth in there, somebody that can kind of do both, that can kind of appeal to that grassroots activist element in the Republican electorate and the business community. But they always go, their impulse is to always go business community. And like you mentioned, Luther Strange and Jeff Coleman, but those candidates can never win in Alabama, at least in a Republican primary.
They can't. Well, it's because they're not true, right? They're not true conservatives, the type of conservatives that Alabama voters are. They may be business-minded conservatives, but business-minded conservatives don't get the volunteers to go out there and knock on the door. They don't show up to rallies. They don't show up to Republican club meetings. They don't do the things that win elections in Alabama. And so we end up constantly, and I've only been in Alabama 8 years now, but for 8 years it's like, how many times can you repeat the same mistake? And hopefully I want to see a campaign. I complained all the time about the last year's Senate race, right? Like, it was a how much do I love Donald Trump, and we didn't get a lot of issues, a lot of the things that we're going to have to take up in a post-COVID world. And in a world where Biden is president, where we're talking about policies and regulations and budgets and things that matter to the actual, to people and to people's lives. And so I would like to see a good, strong, spirited campaign where we have, of course, the Mo Brookses, of course, the candidates we know are going to come in, but we have a business candidate in there who can talk about feeling the same and believing the same things that we strong conservatives believe, but also in a way that makes us go, all right, we do need a different type of voice up there. I think it is, I think it's going to be a great race to watch, and it's going to be a long and painful one, because if it starts this week and it starts with Trump's impeachment, it's going to be a long one.
Yeah, I think you're right. But this is how, this was about the time, if you recall, in 2019 when Congressman Byrne got his, made his announcement, and then I was doing radio in Huntsville, kind of hitting events, and you started seeing Tommy Tuberville show up. And then you had everybody telling us that it was going to be Roy Moore, those dumb Republicans in Alabama are just going to go with Roy Moore because Roy Moore just doesn't poll. That turned out to be not the case. But yeah, it does seem like this seems from between now and, our prior guest, Paul DeMarco, said between now and June, you're going to have to start making moves. And now is the time. I don't know what you're hearing, but starting to hear about staffs getting made and some decisions getting made about a 2-year slog.
It's going to be interesting. I can't wait to, I love talking to you, Jeff, but I can't wait to get off the phone and see what's happening in terms of these campaigns starting. Cause you know that right now people's phones are blowing up and, you know, everybody's been talking about this, but there's one thing from, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. Until that press release was sent, until the words came out of Shelby's mouth, no one really knew. I mean, people have said he's going to die in that office. It was just never a sure thing he was going to leave. And so it will be very interesting to see. But I think in terms of putting together teams, this is the opportunity for to look at what can be put together in the state, to see how you combine the policy-minded people with the people who get out and vote. That's what Tuberville did right in his campaign. He got grassroots people, and he went to every event, and he went to every radio show, and he was just out there hustling. And so now's the chance when we're going to find out who the hustlers are, who the people who are actually going to get out there, do the work, and of course, not to be forgotten at all, but raise the money, because without money, you find yourself in some trouble, which I think is what happened when Jeff Sessions got back into the race. The money dried up for Bradley Byrne and everybody else, and that's what made it be the Sessions Tuberville two-way race.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. The one thing that's a little surprising to me, as wide open as this is, that we don't have more than just three names, and I don't know who that would be that we're mentioning. But you're talking about I was thinking about this, the business community and not doing well politically. I guess their biggest. The biggest ally right now was Kay Ivey, but Ivey, if you look at her campaign, didn't necessarily, well, I mean, she obviously got a leg up by winning the lieutenant governor's race and then inheriting the governor's office after Bittner.
All Ivey had to do
right
to get back in the governor's office was breathe.
Just not, don't be Robert Bentley, it seems.
Yes.
But that's
you, And that's not a good, you know what, in terms of campaign strategy, it was the very best strategy there is. Keep your candidate alive and keep her out of trouble. That's it. That's all they had to do. They didn't have to prove competency. They didn't have to prove her conservative values. They didn't have to do anything, and which was a very frustrating thing because we had some great candidates for governor, and we didn't get to hear the spirited debate we should have had.
But that was the one business community win there in the last, I don't know, 6 years in state elections. It has to be Ivy's run for governor and then just kind of lay into waste the Republican opponents. So, you know, they got me thinking, though, I just the circumstances, and I think particularly in this election cycle, aren't going to line up for a business community, business favorable type candidate to win.
Not unless they start hustling yesterday. I mean, there are There are people on the ground who can get out and work a campaign and can make a nobody a somebody. But those people aren't sitting in the BCA offices. The people sitting in the BCA offices, as much as I adore a few of them, they are Montgomery insiders who have snubbed their noses at the voters and the Roy Moore supporters and the conservatives and the Tea Party in the state, the people who get people elected. They have snubbed their nose at them their entire lives, their entire careers. And so that's not going to get a business person elected. It's going to be a really fun race to watch. And I hope other people get in. I truly do. I hope that we see more than just the candidates we're talking about. Do you think Palmer's going to get in?
If Mo gets in, I don't think Palmer gets in. Hey, April, can we hold you over for the break? I know you want to weigh in on Arthur Orr and the prisons, but we got to get a time in out here. All right, guys, we are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5, 24 minutes after the hour on this Monday morning. Hey, hold it, April Marie Fogle over for one more segment. On the heels of Richard Shelby making it official that he is not running for the United States Senate in 2022. We'll read you a statement maybe later on in the program. Certainly not totally unexpected news. Probably the worst kept secret in Alabama politics, but more on that later. Real quick, before we have to go to the news break here, April Marie, you mentioned wanting to weigh in on the governor's lease build plan, Governor Ivey going around, doing an end run around the Alabama legislature, not having to get their consent to go ahead and enter into this public-private partnership, build three, private company would build three prisons, three buildings on their land, and we would just rent it and staff it with our own personnel. Not entirely a private prison, but kind of done it in a way that's a little too cute by half, but it looks like there's nothing there to stop her.
It is unbelievable to me that they actually are going to allow this to happen. The legislature controls the purse strings. The governor can only commit the money that the legislature gives her in the budget. For them to sit up there and say, too late, we couldn't, we coulda, woulda, shoulda, for them to not stop this, for them to say, we had the opportunities to do it in the past and not be able to get something together now is infuriating. The taxpayers should be mad as hornets. We should all be looking at this and going, this doesn't solve any of our corrections problems. This doesn't solve our justice problems. This doesn't solve budget problems. This is, I'd say, a Band-Aid over a bullet hole, but it's not even that. It's just, it's crazy. It's putting a finger on there, on the dam here. It's an incredibly frustrating process to watch the legislature look like they're about to just throw up their hands and say, we can't do anything, as opposed to really taking this on.
Well,
the promises they made when they campaigned on being small government fiscal responsible, that's not what they're living up to.
No, I agree with that. I just, you know, in our form of government, for things to function properly, it's what? You got three co-equal branches of government. Not in these last 2 years. It's really been executive heavy, and this prison deal is just further evidence of it. But I don't know what they were waiting on. We, all throughout 2018, 2019, into 2020, and there was always some discussion about a special session or something like that. It never happened. And, here we are today. It just looks as if the governor's just going to do this, and there'll be some hemming and hawing, but at the end of the day, no one ever put up any fight.
It was like us watching, you know, now in hindsight, looking back over the last, you know, 6 to 8 months, watching this is like watching a car accident, right? Like we could see it coming, but the price and the details, the photo they released, the governor's office released, which to me was one of the worst photos I've ever seen somebody release on purpose, of the governor dwarfed by the contract it just is mind-boggling. I urge your listeners, if you haven't seen that photo, to go find the picture of the governor sitting there with the Crimson contract, because they're humongous. And this is a deal. This is a bad deal for the state, a bad deal for the prisoners. It's just all around a bad deal. And I'm just somewhat baffled by the fact that the legislature seems to be more interested in discussing the mask mandates than the prison, because the mask mandates are, you know, it's not like we're going to see another, that crisis come around again, yet whereas this prison, we're going to be paying for this for years to come, and she's tying their hands budget-wise for years to come. So it's an incredibly odd list of things the legislature is prioritizing, and I really hope that people get with it and start making their voices known, that they, that yes, okay, we, nobody likes the mask, but when it comes to the end of the day, the things that the legislature should be doing is weighing on things like this horrible contract.
Well, and I think there's some truth to that, but it's weird watching how this legislature has really conducted itself. You have a lot of new members. A third of them are new, and I don't think they ever fully recognize the ability to legislate. But anyway, we're out of time, April. We'll do this again. I'm sorry we're a little short on time with the news, but I appreciate you coming on.
You're great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. April Marie Fogle, Alabama Today. Y'all go check it out, Alabama Today. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. But I will.
Folks said that I would change my mind. I'd straighten up and do just fine. Ah, but I still love rock and roll. I keep on rolling with the flow.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5, 34 minutes after the hour on this Monday morning. Thank you for listening. Come up tomorrow on the program from the Media Research Center, Dan Gaynor, and probably a few other guests to be named later once we kind of get an idea of where the news cycle is headed. So make sure that you tune in. Joining us now, very excited, always, to have on my next guest, and a guy I think an ally in the fight to four-lane Highway 45 from Mobile to the Mississippi state line. State Representative Shane Stringer joins us on the line. Representative, how are you this morning?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me again.
Thanks thanks for making time for us. Let's kick things off from your perspective up in Montgomery at the State House. Certainly unusual, I guess, without a ton of people roaming around as it, you know, it typically goes there. But talk to us about that experience.
It's definitely different not having a lot of people up there, roaming the halls and reaching out to us on certain legislation and bills that are being introduced. But on the other hand, it's also kind of freed me up to be able to get a lot more done and to be able to work on some of the stuff I've got coming.
Yeah, and you're not having to just have people stop you in the hallways or whatnot. I guess that does, it does make things run a little more smoothly. We were talking to a guest earlier in the program about this, and look, you're a freshman member, and I don't know if you made your decision about what you're going to do in 2022, but you're really looking at your, a lot of these members are looking at their accomplishments this first quadrennium. And because of COVID, that's really kind of disrupted things and not really given you, I think, a full resume like you might have in any other quadrennium.
I agree. I think it's definitely going to alter, how we are perceived our first quadrennium and what we're able to accomplish. So, we are fighting for our constituents and doing, and of course, the new members are still trying to, feel their way out and get settled in, and we're getting there and getting closer every day, and things are getting better. But, it's going to be interesting, as you say, at the end of this quadrennium and what we're able to accomplish and able to have done.
Yeah, and that's really, I don't know if there, maybe that makes it seem like there's a sense of urgency to do something, and may it, whatever it might be, the annual discussion of lottery and gaming, or something with health care or rural broadband, whatever the signature achievement's going to be. But doing these big things under these circumstances where you don't really have public input, do you think that makes it a little different?
It does. One of the things that I've done is I've done it since I've been there, but to try to reach out to anybody that may be affected in any of the legislation that I have and any of the legislation as it comes up, you know, just to make sure that, if there's a bill relating to radio announcers, I'm going to reach out to you and Sean and get your advice and vice versa on these other issues and just try to make sure we're making wise, prudent decisions on the people that these bills and legislation affect.
Yeah, and tell me, I guess the other thing is you have, or at least the legislature has at least tried to add the transparency through technology, streaming some of these hearings or the proceedings on the floor, and offering the public access the best they can.
I think that the leadership in both houses have really went above and beyond to try to accommodate that and make the best of a bad situation. This is definitely unusual for everyone involved across the country, not just Alabama. And, you know, we're going to have to just do the best we can do and hopefully with the vaccines and, you know, everybody already having it, maybe we can get this under control and we can get back to some kind of normal life.
Yeah, and then that's the hope. You go this week, you sit out that third week, and then maybe in a month or so that the vaccine will be more readily available and you can start having a little more a public buy-in or public participation, let's say, in the legislative process. I think that that seemed to be where leadership was going when they set the schedule this year.
That's right. Yeah, you know, I hope that can happen because it's really important that that all parties involved are able to communicate their concerns and issues before this any legislation is passed. This stuff can affect lives, good or bad. So we need to make sure that we're getting the input that we need from, you know, all interested parties.
Joined by State Representative Shane Stringer on the program. Representative, a few items to talk about here. Your bill here that would create the Alabama Firearms Protection Act. You got a bunch of co-sponsors, I see, looking at it here. Talk to us about what you're trying to accomplish.
Well, you know, we've noticed across the country and across, you know, the United States, there's been a big push from the federal government to hinder or do away with our Second Amendment rights and infringing on the gun rights. And something's got to be done to stand up for this. And this is where I'm coming with this. You know, you just had the H.R., I think, 127 introduced in the Congress from Texas that basically just gives some pure crazy issues that you would have to go through to get a gun, you know, whether you're restroom taxation and psychological exams. I mean, just a lot of stuff that is unreasonable in my opinion. And, you know, it appears that we're just going to have to address these issues on a state level. And hopefully, you know, there's other states other than Alabama that have passed and are introducing similar legislation, and we've got to do something. I mean, it's so obvious that people are concerned, people are worried, and it's obvious that people are very Second Amendment. I mean, go to Walmart and try to buy a box of ammunition and see what happens. I mean, people are concerned, and this bill will address taxing and prohibiting on items that attach to guns, whether it be the size of a magazine, whether it be a red dot sight, that type of stuff. It's going to address that in this bill too. So, you know, is this bill going to be a fix-all? I doubt it, but it's definitely a step in the right direction.
You know, we talk about this, it seems like every year we're dealing with this issue. Do you still hear from, I assume you do, I know there are these groups that don't even think we need to have a gun permit, that we have a constitutional right to carry guns. I mean, this issue is so multifaceted, but did you have... You have all these constituency groups, all these advocacy groups really pulling it in different directions. And it seems to me getting, for that reason, that most of us all kind of agree on the general concept of Second Amendment rights. It's just how far do you take it and what's acceptable enough of getting it and just how far do you take it seems to be where the hangup is.
That's right. And that becomes I guess a stickler in every session in dealing with this, but we just did the Republican Party just did a poll recently that showed that 70% of the ones polled believe that constitution carry should be enacted, that should be in place. And there's been reasons for the permit system, and it's several reasons, but one of the things has been officer safety. But hopefully we're going to address that this year. One of the legislators is going to drop a bill introducing a prohibited persons database and something truthfully that we've needed forever that will allow anytime a law enforcement officer goes to pull a car over when they're ran through the system, if they're in that prohibited database, then it will show up and I'll let that officer know if they're getting ready to go do execute a arrest warrant. When they run that person, it's going to show if they're on a prohibited database. Lots of stuff there that's going to help with that prohibited. If we can get that in place, that's going to address the officer safety issue. I don't think pistol permits will ever go away. I think even if you do a constitution carry, I do believe the public is still going to get their permits. People like to have that. So it's kind of like a little miniature insurance policies, and I think people will still get those even if you do the constitution here.
Yeah, and that's you come at it from a unique perspective. I'm sure your constituents are telling you one thing, but just having served in that law enforcement role and knowing, these are deadly weapons, do you find yourself having to tell some of these folks, let's pump the brakes because these laws, these measures, they do have real world implications. We really need to take them seriously. That you need to balance Second Amendment protections with public safety.
Yeah, and that's what I try to explain to people. We've got to look at the unintended consequences of some of this. This bill here that I have, HB 337, is not going to be the fix-all, and that's what I want people to understand. Even if we are able to get this passed, they still need to be careful and make sure they're aware of all laws and everything prohibited, because, if you get arrested and you're having to fight this, you may win it, but your the money that it costs you to hire an attorney and defend yourself may be detrimental. So we've got to put common sense in everything that we do, and we've got to look at that in addressing some of this. This is not just a statewide. We're getting a lot of traction from across the state, but not just across the state. I mean, I'm getting contacted from people all across the country, from Texas, Pennsylvania, Mississippi, Tennessee, everywhere that are concerned, have the same concerns and are issues, and are looking for their legislators and politicians to stand up and try to protect them.
Representative, let's move on to it's always fun to kind of talk about highway construction, roads and bridges. Now Governor Ivey on last week on her State of the State address announced a few projects, Geneva County, Fayette County, and then I think the one closest to this listening audience that really matters is Highway 43 from Thomasville to Tuscaloosa. Obviously, already part of that is Interstate Highway, but from, I guess, where 43 splits and heads south this direction, got to get four lane. Do you think that's a sign at all that maybe that 45 could be next, or that, you know, that's even a possibility at this point?
I think so. We're getting a lot of traction. You know, like I told you on the last show, we've gotten the support of the Coastal 150 group, and they're making it one of their legislative top priorities. And, you know, I've had good conversations with Chief of Staff Joe Bonner, and he's really listening to me. And, you know, I've been contacted by a lot of politicians in Washington County, even up in Mississippi. I've had one of the state legislators in just north of us there in Mississippi's reached out to me, and, you know, just saying how important this project's going to be, not only for our area and district, but for them too. And, you know, that if there was anything they could do to try to encourage the governor to put this on the priority list. So we're getting support. I've had conversations with just about every elected official in Mobile County, and every single one of them, and Baldwin County, and every single one of them agree that this is a need, a necessity, and a priority, and they're willing to support me in this effort. So I do believe it's coming, and I do believe the governor's office is listening, and we'll just have to, you know, we're just going to have to continue to work hard and continue to get them the letters of support and let them know how important this is to us and continue to fight forward.
Yeah, I mean, and it does go with, it doesn't go without saying. I mean, I think that route is it needs improvement, not just because you know, of business and commercial and tourist traffic, but it's also I think a good hurricane evacuation route, an alternative to heading north on 65. You know, you look at the big thoroughfares, 98, 45, 43, and 65. 45 just seems like a natural fit because you already got it four lane from Mississippi and beyond.
Yeah, and that's what the you know, representative from Mississippi was telling me. You know, they're in the same boat. They've had it forever, and it is really a blessing for them. And, you know, like you said, this ain't just. I mean, you've got so many reasons. You got, it's the hurricane evacuation route. It's the deadliest highway in Alabama. That, number one, should be enough for me. But, you know, it right now is the prime time for us to tackle this project while so much of the needed land is available and could be gotten at a cheaper rate than probably in the future. So now's the best time for us to address this, and let's make this happen. You've got more industry in Mobile that pertains to travel and commerce, which is the Amazon shipping center, Walmart shipping center, Airbus, also I can go on and on and on, that are traveling that road now, delivering their products and merchandise. So now is the best time to let's try to grow Southwest Alabama. I mean, we, Huntsville and North Alabama's doing great, and I'm tickled to death for that, but, you know, they're growing and we're doing stuff there, but now is the time to let's get some growth in Southwest Alabama. Let's get 45 opened up.
Well said, Representative. We got to leave it there. Be safe in Montgomery. We appreciate your time this morning.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, and y'all have a blessed day.
You do the same. Say, Representative Shane Stringer, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to get a break in here. We'll be right back to wrap it all up. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5, 54 minutes after the hour on this Monday morning. A texter here writes, and I think this is a fair question. I see Richard Shelby will not seek re-election for a seventh term, so this announcement free him up to vote to convict Trump. I tell you what, maybe, but I think if Shelby wants to handpick his successor, and trust me, there's many of those conversations that have been out there, he'd be wise not to do that, because then here's what happens. You're going to have a bunch of candidates trying to distance themselves from Richard Shelby. So Shelby wants to be a player in this upcoming election for his replacement. He probably ought not try to go down the Mitt Romney route. I just don't think that would go well with the folks in Alabama, and I don't know what would he have to gain from that additionally, other than upsetting some donors. Keep this in mind. Richard Shelby, very good fundraiser. You ever hear from him, that's his thing. He memorizes FEC reports, and that's, he knows who gave and who didn't. I would assume he's going to be doing the same for his handpicked successor, which seems to be Katie Boyd Britt, head of the BCA. And if he goes and he votes to convict Trump in impeachment, will those same, not all of them, but some of them might be a little reluctant to write checks to any Shelby-endorsed cause. So that's why I would be skeptical if he would that he would be willing to vote to impeach Trump. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we got Dan Gaynor of the Media Research Center, probably with some other guests. Still yet to be determined, but hopefully you could tune in for that. But you don't need to wait for my show tomorrow. All you gotta do is stay right where you are for radio conversation, particularly, I would assume, the official Shelby announcement with Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile. Sean, what you got for the folks today?
I know, big surprise, the Shelby announcement. for a second here, I listened to you talk about that text. You and I talked about this several, not that we're the only people, but when Shelby didn't back Roy Moore, right? The people were talking back then that maybe this was the first signs of him not running again. I don't think that's as big of a deal now, people looking in retrospect, but back then people talked about it.
Yeah, and I guess we don't really, I don't want to say this, I don't think we were all caught flat-footed by the announcement.
No, but, come on, we were not. We've talked about this many years.
But all these guys that took a shot at it this last cycle, right, and didn't succeed, I mean, that clears a lot of the bench because I guess the exception would be John Merrill. But, you hear the same three, four names from everybody. It just seems like it'd be a lot more names, and maybe that's to come. But it just seems like there'd be a lot more names we're talking about other than Mo Brooks, Katie Britt, and John Merrill.
You don't think, what about Bradley Byrne?
I mean, I don't think he can win, that statewide name ID, he put everything into it and couldn't catch on north of Conecuh County.
Well, we'll see if it's Katie Boyd Britt's election to lose, isn't it?
I don't think she's. I don't think she has name ID. I think it's Mo Brooks right now. If you ask me today, it's Mo Brooks' election to lose.
I wouldn't bet against that.
These things can change in a hurry, but no one has shown that they're going to hold a candle to him because he's going to have Trump's backing.
There you go. Todd Stacey joins me next hour. We'll talk about that. Also, Attorney General of the State of Alabama, Steve Marshall, in hour number two of the show.
All right, folks, I got to get out of here. Stay tuned for Midday Mobile with Sean. Sorry, Phyllis, I could not say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.